Welcome back to the Drunk Poet Society. My name is Taylor.
My name is Felice. Hi, guys.
Did you like our intro song?
I'm so looking forward to getting to listen to it along with the actual intro, as you got to experience.
Yeah, but I liked my version, too.
Was it better? I don't know.
Probably. No offense to your husband, but I think I did a better job.
Well, you know, he still wrote it. It's fine. Your arrangement or...
Yes, my arrangement.
Whatever you want to call it.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Wow. Another week, another book, huh, guys?
Yeah. And this one was... I don't want to say it was an easy read, because the last one, obviously, I blew through it because I've read the next 5 books in the series since then. Because I'm really embarrassing. I think I'm just trying to give you the whole box set, Taylor. I'm trying to hook you up with all the Sookie Stackhouse books.
You can just finish them all up, and then I'll just go ahead. Because they're great beach reads. Like, they're super fun and easy, and if you like the characters, then, you know, you keep going. It's one of those series.
And if you can't go to the beach because, you know, pandemic, they're great couch reads also, which is where I primarily been reading mine. But today we are, it's not really in the same category. I was almost going to say like we're going off the same category, but we're not. We are reading Stay Sexy and Don't Get Murdered by Karen Kilgareth and Georgia Hardstark.
Yes, the definitive, I'm going to read the little thing.
Oh, please do, because I wish I had before I read
it. The definitive how-to guide. Okay, so full title, Stay Sexy and Don't Get Murdered, the definitive how-to guide. And then it says, a dual memoir by the creators of the hit podcast My Favorite Murder. So, initial thoughts when I suggested this book, the title suggests there will be murder involved. Not necessarily to one of them. I know this is a memoir and they're both still alive. So, not that. But just based off the fact that their podcast is My Favorite Murder and it's called The Definitive How-To Guide, I really went into this thinking that there would be some discussion of how to stay sexy and not get murdered. Am I wrong in thinking this?
No. I didn't read the second half of the title that said anything about a memoir. So I was, a little surprised. I want to say in like the first couple pages, Karen says something about, oh, if you're a 12-year-old, you know, put this book away. Like if you're just looking for murder pictures, like put this book away. And I was like, oh. Like, I don't want pictures. I don't need that, but I did want some favorite murders.
Yeah.
What's your Hold experience? On 1 second. Oh, here it comes.
I've never done this on the podcast. Oh, it's going away. I don't think I've sneezed
because
yet.
You talked about it. It's gone now. Well, okay, before we get super deep into it, let's talk about our remote cocktails, which were very similar.
Yes, I think we both went fancy on our garnishes this time.
Yeah, I'm going to take the wheel off the top, though, because that's going to be real awkward to drink it. There we go.
We're calling our cocktail... Ooh, don't spill.
Spilling all over the table? Is that what we're calling it? That's what I did.
Oh, I was going to call it something different, but if you want to call it spilling all over the table...
No, we can definitely call it something different.
I was going to call it Sweet Baby Angel, based on, what is that, chapter 2? Chapter 2 of the book?
Yeah, I think so.
So, which we'll get into, but this is the Sweet Baby Angel, and I'll tell you what I did, and you can tell me how you did it a little differently or whatever. Basically, in the bottom of the glass that I chose, I put in, and I honestly did not measure anything, so I did a splash of lemon juice, I did a dash of Hendrick's gin, that was pretty much it. I stirred that, and then I added... sparkling water, some ice, and then I put in a cucumber slice and a lemon peel, and I just kind of stirred that all up and let it sit for a second so I could get the cucumber essence in there, and I have a lovely Sweet Baby Angel drink.
Oh, there you go. I was super extra today, and it did not pay off for me at all. First, I was like, you know what? I really want this to be like super spa watery. Cool. So I brought out my Nutribullet, and I was like, okay, so I'm going to put in all of my things that I would normally put in my shaker or muddle into my Nutribullet, and that ended up all over the counter. So RIP, ounce and a half, or a splash, as Taylor would call it, very technical terms, of Hendrick's. So that was very sad. Second time around, I shaved a cucumber enough so that I could kind of make it look like it was kind of coiling around my glass. I added a big ice cube. I muddled lemon juice, simple syrup, equal parts, a wedge of cucumber that I took the peel off because I really didn't think peel would muddle very well. At least I was smart enough there. And my gin. And then I served that on my big ice cube with, topped with just plain sparkling water. So hopefully it's not garbage, but there's lots and lots of bits on top. Hooray. So if you don't like bits, don't muddle.
Cheers. So.
Cheers.
Clink, clink. You know, I knew I really couldn't go wrong with this combo.
No. That, I mean, it is spa water. There's probably alcohol in here.
I feel like my skin is getting cleaner already. Isn't that why we drink cucumber water? Mm-hmm. I can see you're chewing something.
Yeah. I'm sure people can hear that I'm chewing something. I'm telling you, there's bits in my glass. So that was a gin-infused cucumber. So could be worse.
Could be worse. Little side tangent. One of my favorite things about summer, this is going to be like the alcoholic coming out in me, is when you can drink wine or anything that you can put fresh fruit into and then you let it just absorb all the alcohol and then you get to eat the fruit at the end, like peaches, mm-hmm. nectarines, and some Chardonnay or a rosé. Oh, I made sangria the other day, and so we did our lovely boxed wine from Trader Joe's because it's perfect for sangria, and I usually throw in whatever fruit I have in the house, so I think I had a whole punnet of blackberries, and then I did sliced up orange and a little bit of lemon and let that soak for however many hours. Then you add a little brandy, sparkling water. I don't do like the ginger ale or Sprite or anything. I just did sparkling water. Man, so good. Oh, I did do like a tablespoon of sugar for the entire like pitcher, sweeten it up a little bit. But then the best part were the blackberries at the end because they had been sitting in wine for 4 hours or whatever.
I feel like all of that sounds incredible, and the only thing that I would add to it, because I'm also not super big, you know this if you're a listener, we're not big on the sugar stuff. So I would love the flavor of like a ginger beer, but I guess if you, with all of your berries, just put like fresh pressed, like ginger in a garlic press or something, and
totally. I would be into that. And I'm going to do like a little quick plug. I don't normally do this, but just yesterday, so on the Turmeric Latte page, that is my business account, a little shameless self-promotion, I've been doing Feel Goodness Fridays, which are like Instagram live streams, and then we post them later as we will be posting it in a podcast version, so if people just want to listen to it, it'll be available. It's not quite there yet, but it is on video versions on our Facebook and Instagram. But I bring it up because yesterday I spoke with my friend Mason, who's in Western Australia, and he is one of the co-founders of Community Brew, which is a kombucha company, and they are very talented. Like, this is not just because they're my friends, but they're legitimately the best kombucha company I've ever tasted. They're small batch. They only serve WA, which sucks because I miss them so much. It's the best kombucha, and they use all really fresh herbs and stuff, but they're working on their own version of a ginger beer that will have less than 1% sugar in it. But like, from what I've heard, it is just the best tasting fermented ginger beer flavor you could ever have. And so it reminded me of that. I'm like, imagine that in like a sangria, or that in the mule or something. And it's healthy.
Ginger kombucha is some of my favorite, yeah. Oh,
so good. Anyways, I digress.
Okay, so we're sipping our Sweet Baby Angels. Here we are. My cat was trying to play fetch for a minute, so I'm glad that stopped. So what is your history, I suppose, with Karen and Georgia and the podcast, and like, how familiar are you with them like prior to reading this?
I listened to a bit of My Favorite Murder going back a few years. So really lately I don't listen to them too much. I feel like there's too much digression in the podcast, and it's kind of, for the fans, it's, you know, probably exactly, they love the personalities, they love both of the hosts, so they just kind of eat it up, which is awesome. It's just, I was in it for the favorite murders, and I feel like that's become less and less over time, and so I just find my true crime stuff elsewhere now. Still like their personalities, but I just can't listen to too many of the episodes. I'm really one of those people, though, who puts two and two together later. Like, I listened to, what is it, Georgia and Allie's Slumber Party or whatever.
Yeah, me too.
But did not know it was the same Georgia and did not know it was the same Allie as Ologies until, like, a few weeks ago. I'm really bad at, you know, putting two and two together when it comes to that. Like, oh, I love this entity and I love this entity. Oh, they're the same people. Anyway, so that's my history.
When I was a nanny, like during nap time, I watched a lot of like cable, I guess. And that's how I came across Allie and Georgia, was because of their dessert show that they did. It was like traveling dessert show. And I looked them both up and found that they did a podcast and started listening to Slumber Party and thought all of the, I don't want to call them gimmicks, but like all of the little things that they had guests do, where it's like, what's your favorite midnight snack? And, or like the snack you eat standing up in your kitchen. Like all of those things I thought were so adorable. It seemed like they had a lot of, chemistry with each other. Like, but, after reading this book, I have changed my mind about some of those things. But, that's why I started listening to My Favorite Murder, like from the beginning. So I was like, oh, okay, I'm super into Georgia Hardstark. I am very interested in true crime. I am there. And I want to say that I listened, including minisodes and everything, for about 18 months. And I kind of fizzled out the same way that you did. So as, and which is fine. You know, they had this thing at one point in time where they kept saying like skippers unite. And it was all the people who use that like 15-cent skip button. And at first it was like, oh, you're skipping past like 5 minutes of catching up and whatever. And then it got to, you know, you could skip 30 minutes at the beginning of the episode. So you're like, okay, that's fine. But through them, I also started listening to a podcast that I love. That's I mostly listen to their true crime episodes, which is Last Podcast on the Left. And I think that they do a really great job. Not that Georgia and Karen don't, but I think that they do a good job of sticking to what they're trying to do while also adding all of their humor and stuff. So if you're looking for a true crime podcast and you are a listener of My Favorite Murder and you love it, cool. Also check out Last Podcast on the Left, because you're going to enjoy it.
But I think that's why when reading the title and knowing the podcast and stuff, I felt deceived when I started reading the book, in a sense, because I liked the first chapter. There were bits of it that I actually really liked. So the first chapter is Fuck Politeness. By the way, this is already going to be marked as an explicit episode. It just is.
Oh, there's no way it can't be.
But going forward, just know it's explicit. So Fuck Politeness. And, you know, if you are a listener of their podcast, you probably have already heard of this concept anyway, or are aware of, like, this is one of their kind of core values in terms of how they live their life now. And it really kind of, even from the beginning, it goes through how they learned this lesson. So it reads a bit self-helpy, you know? But what, anyways, starting from the beginning, what did you think about the Fuck Politeness chapter?
I agree with a lot of the principles. So like, again, as someone who listened to the podcast for a while, all of the chapter titles were already familiar to me. Like I've heard them both say all of these things before. And I still have to remind myself all of the time to fuck politeness. And because, I mean, that's especially, I don't want to, you know, turn this into a gender thing, but especially women, like we are taught, these are the things you need to do in order to be polite. Like, even if someone is making advances toward you, like you still, you're not just going to shut them down and be like, you know, bye boy, you know, and it's a good reminder probably to a lot of people who don't have those ideas. So to me, it was more just like, okay, so I get to see why you have these thoughts now. And, you know, you get Georgia's whole story with the photographer, right? That was in Fuck Politeness. And how ultimately, like, she was able to get around that situation and have it be favorable, but she was still uncomfortable and was still think like, oh, I'm young, he knows better, I need to be polite. What did you feel?
I think it's a good concept to bring to light. And also even things like, one thing I've learned, and I'm not single, but when, you know, when I was single, and let's say you're at a bar and you might be waiting for your friends to show up, or you might just be alone for whatever reason, and someone comes and makes an advance on you, and you don't want anything else from this interaction, you know, I find sometimes as a female, we make up excuses like, oh, my boyfriend, even if you don't have a boyfriend or a girlfriend or whatever, it's like, oh, I'm taken. Or you come up with some excuse like, oh, I'm waiting for my friends to show up or whatever. But you, like, I think oftentimes women feel like they can't just say, I'm just not interested. And and then the male often...
Oh, because it'll hurt someone's feelings.
That, or like the male will be like, well, why not? And you shouldn't have to explain it. You should just be able to say, you know, fuck politeness. Like, I'm not interested. Please move away now. Like, that should be an okay response to someone making unwanted advances. And in terms of the context of the book, you know, with George's story and the photographer, that is the same story you hear when, like, women go missing or women end up murdered or, you know, they end up in terrible situations, raped or anything like that. And she happened...
Even just going to, like, Me Too and Harvey Weinstein and all of those things that have happened. Like, those are women who are just like, well, this is an awkward situation, and I guess I just have to roll with it.
Yeah, and so I think the first chapter was okay for me, but I was still like, wow, this is... I think still just starting there, I was like, this isn't exactly what I expected. Let's see how it goes moving forward, because they do mention a couple of specific murders throughout the book, you know, like, kind of allude to them or talk about personal experiences of knowing people in their lives going missing or ending up dead. But that really was not the main premise at all. And so I think in term, and feel free to comment on this, because again, going back to the title, Stay Sexy, Don't Get Murdered, The Definitive How-To Guide, and then like underscore the memoir, you know, I can maybe see how they were like, oh, I'll tell this story, you know, fuck politeness, because I could have been murdered in this scenario. Like, I can maybe see the correlation, but I just still think it's a deceiving title for the content that I got throughout the entire book.
I think the trouble is I have no problem with, like, self-promotion and marketing and all of those things. That is fine, but it makes me, like, I deviate from caring the moment it kind of, like, goes from you're promoting your brand and the things that you do to just promoting yourself. And neither of them are murder experts. Neither of them are, you know, therapists, even though, you know, they've seen a whole bunch of them. So it seems just kind of like, oh, well, we're celebrities now, so let's just... We're just going to write about ourselves. And I feel like that's where it kind of lost me a little bit. And I was like, okay, well, you have people that think of you that, like that. And like, we picked up the books and we read them. But I don't know. Maybe I wasn't the... I was probably not the right audience.
Same.
Which
and,
is all it
but
is.
I think that there's a lot of famous people from... I mean, there actually... I don't think there is. There's definitely a lot of famous people just writing memoirs for the sake of writing memoirs, because it's a cash grab right now. There are YouTubers. There are quote-unquote influencers. There are... I shouldn't say quote-unquote. I take that back. Because influencers do make good money. It is a legitimate job, so I apologize for the initial remark. but you probably don't need to write a memoir, is what I'm saying. And
well, and I don't want to be judgmental of age in any way whatsoever, but I want to say about 5 or 6 years ago, I read a memoir written by Sarah Bareilles. And at the time, I was like, okay, this is someone that I really like. And if I get this memoir, like, I'm also buying her albums. Okay, cool. I support her. And as I read through her book, which was incredibly short, so that's also another thing, I was thinking, and I was like, okay, she's like 35 when she's writing a memoir. Like, I'm not that far from there. Is that necessary?
Yeah.
Like, have I done enough things? And granted, we read Educated, and that is a memoir written by a young person that is incredible. Like, the amount of life that this person has lived. And I'm not saying that Georgia and Karen have not lived enough life to write a memoir, but it just seems like you wrote it
Yeah.
because someone was like, here's some money.
Yeah.
put it out. And, people will read it.
And that's the thing, that it became very repetitive very quickly for me. So throughout every chapter, I felt like there was a mention of a therapist, and there was a mention of an eating disorder, and there was a mention of alcohol. And it... And,
latchkey parents in the 80s.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I just need a quick vent sentence. My least favorite chapter was Karen's on how to be a latchkey kid. It read so boring to me, because it was just like, how to be a latchkey kid, and it's like step one, and it, and that was kind of the prose of that whole chapter, where it's like step one, you know, get home with your sister and no one's home, step two, get lemonade mixture out of the cupboard, step three, forget that you got lemonade mixture out of the cupboard, step four, decide to make cookies. I'm like, this is just a day in the life of a kid, and nothing actually interesting happened until it was like, oh, someone knocked on the door, and then I almost said that my parents were home, but luckily my sister said that my parents were home or on their way home or something like that.
Like, that moment right there was the entire point of the chapter.
Yeah.
So soon, I listened to that one because I, luckily from Libby, there was no waiting list, which maybe is, I guess, sorry, ladies, there was no waiting list for your books. That sounds kind of bitchy. But I had the audiobook and I had the digital copy. So I was going back and forth between them, because when it comes to memoirs, I don't know about you, when it comes to most books, I read faster than I listen, even if I'm listening to something at 1.25. So I was baking banana bread in true, you know, self-isolation fashion. My first loaf of banana bread this quarantine. I'll just have you know. But I was listening to that chapter, and at one point in time, I was like, I had to exhale and was like, it's still happening. All right, it's still going. Okay. And considering the fact that, like, Karen is the writer of the two and has, like, gotten paid to be a writer. Again, I feel like I'm just being mean. I'm really sorry, Karen and Georgia. Don't write a book if you don't want people to talk about it.
It's fine.
But I enjoyed Georgia's chapter so much more.
Same.
Going with her dad camping. I think that was my favorite chapter. When she moved to LA and had that terrible relationship and got her own little, like, Vespa. Like, those little wins. Like, I really enjoyed those bits. But yeah, no, the latchkey kid thing, I don't know. Most of my memories with that and my mom going back to work when I was a kid, I heard her say over and over and over again, and she was a teenager and, like, she turned 18 in 1981. I just don't want you guys to be latchkey kids. And I feel like I never understood what that meant. Like, I don't think I got a house key of my own until I was in maybe, like, middle school. Like, in elementary school, I didn't have my own house key. Which feels fine, I guess. Although I bet most of my students have had house keys for a long time. But, yeah, I just didn't care. Like, I didn't think it was funny. I liked that she did tie it together with a guy coming to the door. And also, I'm super jealous of all of these people that have incredible memories, because I could never write a memoir like that because my memory is garbage.
But I think maybe, you know, I was just thinking about it, because I agree, for the most part, I enjoyed Georgia's chapters more. And maybe it was more about picking... I felt like Karen's chapters were maybe a bit broad, and Georgia was picking pivotal moments that she does have really strong recollections of, and writing them not only as the recollection, but taking what she learned from that situation and making that, like, the kind of thesis of the chapter. Whereas Karen's, just like I said, they felt kind of a little all over the place. Even talking about, you know, paying your dues either as an intern or an unpaid person, and then, you know, but because she at one point she talked about being in the entertainment industry and getting into writing and comedy writing, and you know, what people ask her for advice all the time, and she's like, you just have to work your way up a ladder. And for her, it was doing stand-up and things like that. It just felt like her chapters would wash over years of her life, and I didn't connect to any of it, and I really didn't care.
And to be fair, you know, she was shit-faced for a huge portion of her life. So the fact that she had big issue with substances probably accounts for a lack of, not memories, but I mean, maybe a lack of memories, but maybe that's why it felt more disingenuous. Like, it kind of felt like Georgia, like, cut herself open and, like, here's all of this crap. Mm-hmm. And I think Karen felt like she did that, but I didn't feel like...
Yeah.
I feel like there's more there. It seemed a little shallow.
Yeah.
So, maybe that's a really great place to take a break.
Yeah, let's pause here and we'll be right back.
All right, welcome back.
Welcome back.
Hello.
So.
We haven't gotten super into a bunch of chapters, but my favorite was Stay Out of the Forest.
Mm-hmm.
I already mentioned before that I liked following Georgia and her dad, Marty,
mm-hmm.
On their camping trips. I'm sure it's super relatable if you grew up with divorced parents. My dad loved camping, but we went all together. And never to, like, Mexico. Like, I'm sorry, you're going fucking camping in Mexico? In the, was that probably the 90s?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I don't know. It just wouldn't maybe be my first thought to drive 10 hours.
Before you go on, though,
to go camping.
What he played in the car, wasn't it just like
one bagpipe music and one Paul Simon album?
Yeah.
That's
all you get.
Oh my God. I mean, let's see. Okay, if it was my dad and I was driving in a car for 10 hours, there would have been a lot of tapes, but one of them definitely would have been like Alabama.
Mm hmm.
And possibly the Alabama Christmas album, even when it wasn't Christmas time. Your dad had a little bit of different taste than mine. What would your dad play if you were in the car for 10 hours?
Oh, it could be very eclectic, you know. I mean, he right now he has Sirius radio or whatever, so mm-hmm. be honest, Jimmy Buffett's on a lot, like that whole Margaritaville channel, and I get tired of it real fast. Like, it's great summer music, but by the third time that, like, Margaritaville comes on, I'm like, But, I mean, we would get a nice mix. He would definitely play some jazz in there. I think we'd get a classical time. We'll get some classic rock. We'd probably get some, like, Beatles radio mm-hmm. up in there. So, it'd be a nice mix.
I mean, there's got to be a reason that you and I have, I would consider, eclectic taste in music. So, mine is because of my mother. It is not because of my dad. So, she goes through the whole process of going on this family vacation. But kind of the big pivotal moment... And when she gets into talking about one of the murders that she mm-hmm. does talk about, one of, like, the two that are in the whole book, she talks about her brother going missing.
Yeah.
And how it was kind of commonplace at that point in time where the family would kind of all go around the TV and watch things like Inside Edition and America's Most Wanted and those kinds of shows. And I was probably discouraged from watching those things when I was a child, but I had probably more supervision than, you know, a latchkey kid in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
The anxiety that she felt when her brother was gone and the fact that her dad was, like, playing it so cool, my dad would not be playing it cool. And she doesn't really talk about how old her brother was at that point in time. That was a question that I had, like, did you let your 12-year-old, like, just go on a hike alone in the mountains?
Yeah, that's okay. Suspicious. But different time, maybe, but still.
Oh, man. If we were camping, I don't know if my mom would even let me, like, walk to the bathroom alone. That's a gender issue, too. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know about you, but I have been hiking alone before and trail running and stuff because... sometimes you just gotta go get a workout in. I would feel one. I'm very excited for the day when I can get a dog, like a big dog that's mm-hmm. gonna go trail running with me. I'd automatically feel a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But there is an amount of trying to, you know, keep your wits about you, especially anyone who's by themselves. If you like to listen to music or anything, always keep one earbud out, or better, get the ear, like the headphones that don't go into your ears, but they, like, sit on, you know, sit outside. They're like bone induction headphones or whatever. I have those, so I can still hear everything going on around me and listen to music. But, you know, still, that being said, I started hiking alone when I was 22 or something like that. Like, no way as a kid would I would just be like, all right, see, I'm gonna go for a stroll in the forest.
Yeah, and I it, the few times I've gone alone, living in LA, I don't drive out to like Angeles National Forest to go hiking alone, mm-hmm. like high traffic trails, yeah. which are kind of crappy, like not my favorite trails, having to go to like Fryman or things like that. But you know that there will be people around. Like, yeah. I'm sorry, it's in the middle of Studio City. There are going to be people everywhere. So yeah, he goes off alone and they just kind of don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And this is all from George's perspective. So like maybe her dad felt a little differently. But he got lost. Like he went off the trail and got lost and like got brought back by hikers.
Yeah. And the other thing too, though, was not even like, were they not talking about it, but they all went to bed. Like even the dad, right?
They went to bed.
Like yes. No one at any point was just like, hey, maybe we should all go stick together and find him, like take a flashlight and go do this thing. No, they're just like, ah, oh, he'll make it or he won't, but let's go to bed. I'm tired.
And that's maybe what makes me think like, okay, maybe Georgia was like 7 or 8 at the time. Like, I don't think that she breaks down like how old they are. But like maybe they're young and her sister are, I don't know. I was trying to figure out, I was like, maybe she's misremembering because she was really little. And you know, our memories from when we were little are half just like our parents retelling the same story over and over. So like, mm-hmm. oh, now we think we remember it.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that was a lot. And I had no idea. The murder that she was talking about was something that I was not familiar with. So mm-hmm. it's like this girl was going camping alone, or right? Like she was going somewhere doing something alone, picked up a hitchhiker that she didn't mm-hmm. know was a bad dude. And after a week of being missing, like her mother killed herself without even her like knowing what happened to her daughter. I was like, oh, I need to look more into that. That's what I wanted to read about. Damn it. That's what I wanted from this book.
Yeah. But that's all we really know.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah.
It's my fault. Like I didn't see, like memoir was in the title.
But it was like, it was tiny. No, it was tiny and it was underneath every, the big title is Stay Sexy and Don't Get Murdered. Smaller title, The Definitive How-To Guide. Tinier title, Memoir.
mm-hmm. Well, and because I listened to it and I read it, some of the chapter bits were from live performances, and maybe this is going to shut down the entire podcasting world. They're going to be so surprised when they hear us. I don't like listening to live podcasts. Like, I'm not into it. It's not my thing. Like, I'm not opposed to, like, going to one. I'm super into that. I would go see Last Podcast on the Left because I bet they're hilarious.
I went to see My Dad Wrote a Porno. They're great.
Yeah. That's something that I would do. But it's kind of like we watched Middle Ditch and Schwartz this morning, an episode of that. That's fine. I'll watch that. I'll watch comedy. I could even like watch it on my TV and I'd be fine. Mm-hmm. But because you're only getting the audio from the performers and you hear like little giggles and stuff coming from the audience every once in a while, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just don't like live episodes. I probably just skip them. Like I'll just, nope, won't listen to that one. That's from your live show, not into it.
Yeah. I mean, I told you this on the little break there, but I'm having a really hard time even remembering specific instances of this book. And I think that just in my head goes to show how much I really didn't care too much about it. And it sucks. And yeah. I'm sorry. I know it kind of just sounds like we're bad mouthing this book, but it just, we're obviously not the audience that gravitated towards this or was into it. And maybe it says something that we both kind of stopped listening to the podcast, and because we were more into the true crime element and less into mm-hmm. the like gabbing about whatever superfluous information.
And I think
information,
they're great, you know? Like I have nothing against Karen and Georgia. I think that they have charisma. I think that they're funny. I think that they're smart. But it's just repetitive. That's the word I was thinking. It's just really repetitive. Like you and I are both super aware of all of our issues.
Yeah.
Okay. I am not saying that neither of us have them. We definitely do. But on every single episode, do we have to talk about our anxiety issues or, you know, relationships with food? Like not necessarily. It's not pertinent to the situation of these conversations.
Yeah, and in terms of like the memoir aspect, again, I think the better avenue is choosing a pivotal moment to make a statement or kind of make the lesson learned type of thing. But when it becomes repetitive, like like therapy, like anxiety, like food, like alcohol. It was this running theme that I think it was less about, here's the lesson I learned, and more about, oh, look at how tough my life was. And I don't mean that to say that
I overcame all this stuff. Yeah.
Like, I don't mean that to sound like I'm brushing it off, because I genuinely am not. And I personally have, you know, worked through a lot of issues very similarly.
Yeah.
But I also don't think it's interesting enough to make an entire book about those issues specifically. If I wanted to mention a pivotal moment where I saw, like, the light, or, like, I wanted to teach a lesson, or I wanted to be self-helpy, mm-hmm. or even if I just thought that that would be a really interesting cornerstone to see how I progressed into my career, because even if this was more of their career-focused book where it's like, well, look at how we got to this point, because also throughout the book, they mentioned multiple times how they met at a party, started discussing murder and true crime, and then that's how they kind of came up with this idea for a podcast.
Why didn't the editors kind of, like, see that that needed to happen one time?
Yeah.
Like, we got it. You guys got tuna melts. Now I'm hungry. Thank you.
And then you mentioned the tuna melts again and again.
And again. When you meet a kindred spirit, someone that shares something with you that you can talk about, you know, for hours and hours and hours, that is a really big deal. And I don't want to downplay the fact that, like, they found something in each other mm-hmm. that they were lacking in all of their other relationships, mm-hmm. because that's incredible to find a person that you can kind of share those things with. But it also just kind of felt like they didn't have very much to say when you keep bringing up the same thing over and over. And when... Again, I feel like I keep prefacing saying that things are going to sound terrible. Having to borrow money from family or having financial issues is a huge stressor and, you know, can make you feel like shit. It's terrible. I don't want to say that I don't care, because obviously you don't want someone to be struggling.
Yeah.
At the same time, any single person in the entire world who's going into the entertainment industry is super aware of the fact that, like, it's kind of feast or famine.
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of what it is. So it's like when you've got Karen who's like, yeah, I had to borrow all of this money from my dad and I wanted to give up and I was not in a really good place when this podcast started. And that's one reason I'm super, super grateful that it did kind of explode. That's fine, except it was like an entire chapter about, like, oh, you know, I finally thought I was doing really well and my boss gave me a Beamer and I turned into an asshole and oh, then I had to sell it because the show got canceled and then I kind of, like, went into financial ruin and now I'm comfortable again because I'm having live shows and people are going to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you, reader, like me. I don't know.
I think not that it needed to be a main point, but there are different groups of people who come to LA aspiring, you know, to be in the entertainment industry. And like you said, it is a tough, tough industry. Mm-hmm. And this is not a new story of hitting a rough patch where you are just legitimately struggling. That being said, there are many people like Karen and like other people that I know who have safety nets in their family, where there are other people who have no safety nets. So it is legitimately make or break moments. And I think maybe the point to drive home was the fact that when she asked her dad for, like, the last loan and he was like, maybe it's time to give up. And then that was, like, kind of her motivation to be like, no, just give me this many more months. I know I can make it work. But she didn't even have that hard of a make or break moment because she knew that if all else failed, she had family that were going to support her. And maybe not financially, maybe she could move home or maybe, and while that wouldn't be ideal, like, obviously that's not ideal because she wants to make it the entertainment industry. There are people who literally have these, like, kind of make or break, you know, that's why, you know, the cliche of being the barista and the waiter or whatever while you're auditioning and while you're doing all this stuff, it's because, like, they have no other option. They need to make it in the entertainment industry because that is what they're striving for. So they will do whatever it takes to make ends meet until that moment. And for a lot of people, that moment never comes. It's a tough gig. It's a really tough gig. So, like you said, it's one of those things where I don't want to say I didn't care, but I really didn't care.
It felt, well, and again, I feel like this is, like, let's shit on Karen time, but I cared so much more, and I felt like Georgia was so much more genuine about it when she was just like, hey, I was a barista, and I worked in a cafeteria, and I did all of these things, and when I was like 30, I was like, you know what? I don't want to work in that office anymore. I'm going to figure something out. And like, that was kind of just it. Like, it was like, okay, and good for her. She made it work. Like, she was able, because of this cooking show, was able to have a basis for a career. Got to meet people, got to interested in podcasting. Like, even if her relationship with Allie very much soured, which we learned at the end of the book, those were all like nice little stepping stones. And I don't feel like there was just more grace there, mm-hmm. I guess. Karen, it didn't feel like there was very much grace. Also, I know I said this when we were kind of like chatting a little bit before we started, and I feel a little bit like an asshole, but as a follower of both Allie Ward and Georgia Hardstark, at one point in time I was like, what happened? Like, what's mm-hmm. the tea here? Because they're on these cooking shows, they have their podcast, they're not famous enough for anybody to like write a blog post about it or like the falling out of Georgia and Allie. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until Georgia started talking about a relationship that she had that was incredibly toxic. And I appreciate the fact that even though Georgia probably does blame a lot of it on Allie, and I'm sure that Allie blames a lot of it on Georgia, because we've all seen relationships like mm-hmm. that kind of get really terrible and fizzle. She is introspective enough to be like, I know it's probably also my fault. Like, it was just, it just wasn't good. And like, yeah. My Favorite Murder helped her to not be dependent upon that toxic relationship, which is cool. Also, she doesn't name names. I just did, but she didn't.
So. I just did.
You're classier than me, Georgia. No. But they're both like really successful in the podcasting yeah. world now. So like, good for you, ladies. I love Ologies.
Yeah, Ologies is a great podcast. Yeah. And now she's also doing her science shows on mm-hmm. Netflix.
She just got nominated for an Emmy. Yeah. Good for you, girl.
So, yeah. Both of you, good for you. Good,
yeah,
you know,
both of
good.
You.
It's
know,
just like the going back to Yes Please,
done, right?
Going back to Yes Please, good for you, not for me. Like in terms of what they could say for yeah. each other, you know, it's like
sure
you went off and did your thing, and
but yeah, no, yeah. I don't know why I wasn't super into Karen's chapters.
Yeah, I think the only
she's just like
yeah.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the only other part of the book that I want to touch on, again, in Georgia chapter, mm-hmm. Is the relationship with the Vespa and stuff. I thought that, we yeah. kind of touched on it, but I, mm-hmm. you know, that was kind of a rom-com-y moment for me, so I actually kind of enjoyed that, where it was, you know, she was working at, what, a vintage store or something like that at the time, wasn't that it?
And it was literally just like I think she described it as a store on Melrose where they would like go downtown and get like crappy clothes from the garment district mm-hmm. and sell them at a 300% markup yeah. on Melrose.
And then she would like walk and like she could get lunch or whatever, but it was kind of freeing, like for whatever the job mm-hmm. was, it sounded at least in this chapter that she was somewhat happy and she liked being on Melrose yeah. and she was doing something for her. And then she sees this Vespa and it's like, oh yeah, I have to, you know, whatever. And goes in and meets handsome man. Don't remember his name.
Aiden?
Sure. That sounds about right. I'll go with Aiden. I might be wrong. She, you know, there's like in my head this montage of her on the back of this Vespa and with the helmets on and
the shitty helmet she keeps talking about. Like, he's got the really good one and she has this like shitty one that's called like a, God, she found out later it's like a brain.
Yeah, brain
keeper
bowl
or hold a brain bowl. Like yeah.
That. Yeah, it was
so your brains
like
don't
that.
Spill out on the pavement.
Oh yeah, essentially, it's not going to protect your head, but it will keep the mess in.
Oh man!
But then you know you. So we come to like they have this kind of romanticized relationship and all this stuff, and then he's trying to ghost her. Right? That's essentially
yeah, 1990s style.
Yeah, like, didn't they have pagers and stuff at that time, too? Yeah. And it was just like
no, she said she was blowing up his pager yeah. with a bunch of 143s.
Yeah. And, I'm mumbling a lot. I was trying to remember the context because she also knows that she's recognizing that she probably seems like the crazy girlfriend mm-hmm. at this time. Like, she's probably seeming insane. But then we come to find out that he's not single and he was the douchebag in all of this. Mm-hmm. But still, like, you know, she kind of, because she showed up, right? She showed up to his work.
After he called her and broke up with her and then the next, she like stayed up all night and was at in front of his work in the morning. And she kind of used that as a stepping stone to talk about like crazy ex-girlfriends all over the place. She's like, no, okay. Crazy ex-girlfriends are not just crazy women. They're women that you did not give a reason to for like why the relationship abruptly ended. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, girl. Oh, but then she saved up her money and she got her own Vespa.
Yeah.
Girl, get it.
Yeah.
Buy your own shit.
Yes.
That was the name of the chapter, right?
Yeah.
Buy your own shit.
Yeah. So I appreciated that chapter. It was like a little romance and interspersed with everything. Still nothing to do with murder, but kind of a fun chapter to read. And kind of, again, brings home the point of, like, learning the lesson and stuff. And to be honest, that's about all I remember about this book.
I love George's reading stories. She talks about how, like, reading was, like, a big escape for her as a kid.
She read a lot of Ray Bradbury.
Read a lot of Bradbury.
And her, Harry Potter hut. Yeah.
With her Hogwarts blankets. Yeah. Atkins that, like, her grandma or her mom or her grandma made. I loved that. I loved that very much. I thought that was super sweet.
It made me want to pick up more Ray Bradbury books.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like that's mostly it. Like, listening to Georgia, I was kind of like, ooh, these are all cool ideas. Like, okay, you're giving me ideas of things to do. Like, I kind of do want to go ride a Vespa up PCH. Maybe I'll ride a Vespa and I'll do that. I probably won't do that. That sounds really scary. People drive really fast on PCH.
Oh, I hate when you're getting into the windy roads and, you know, I'm the slowest driver. I will pull over anytime I think someone's too much on my butt. Like, you can pass me. I don't care.
Okay, so we've talked about this before when it comes to books that take place places we've been. Mm-hmm. It's always a lot easier to understand, at least for me, I'm once I kind of get the landscape of the place that I'm at, I'm really good with directions. Like, once I've got a map in my brain of where I am, I'm cool. So George's chapter, it was the same one, like, Buy Your Own Shit, where she's talking about how she used her little Vespa that she bought to get to know Los Angeles. And now I went through Los Feliz and Silver Lake and probably Larchmont and all of these other neighborhoods. And it was just so sweet to be able to, like, think of all of those things. Like, oh, okay, I know where all of those places are because this is where I live. This is where I grew up. And probably, like, taken for granted things. Like, you're listening to her talk about how precious, you know, being on Melrose was. And I definitely thought that was, like, way cool when I was a kid, going down to Melrose or Santa Monica Boulevard or any of those places. I thought was super rad. But now, like, if I wanted to, I could just, like, pop over. It'd probably take me 15 minutes because, you know, there's no traffic right now. I don't know. So I like things like that. But that being said, I also missed a lot in this book. So, before we do closing thoughts on the actual book, do you want, rather than sharing favorite murders, because we both know we like that stuff, and maybe we could do that another time, so I don't know about you, but I've always found serial killers fascinating, mostly because I can't understand how their brains work. Like, how is this compulsion? Like, yeah, if I see a tissue on the floor, I'm going to feel the compulsion to get up and throw it away because it's really going to bother me if it's sitting there. But the same kind of feeling of, like, I need to peel the skin off of this person's skull and, like, keep it in my closet. Because that was a thing that happened. So I've always loved serial killers. So suffice it to say, who is a serial killer that you wish you could study or that you think is super rad and terrifying and awesome and also scary? And I should stop saying adjectives.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I like a lot of true crime stuff. And, you know, I listen to the podcast Cults and I listen to Atlanta Monster and of course Serial, the first season.
Oh yeah.
Well, not a serial killer, that, you know, that one's a little different, but true crime still. You know, even like Making a Murderer, I don't know if anyone watched that, but that is the biggest thing about any kind of like documentary or series is it's very biased. So of course I watched it and was like, oh yeah, he's totally innocent, this is like totally framed. But at the same time, a lot came out later that I was like, no wait, there was more evidence than obviously what was portrayed. And so you kind of have to take everything with a grain of salt. So if I had, you know, the first one that came to my mind, and I wouldn't be able to talk to this person because it's still unsolved, is the Zodiac Killer. That one with like the letters and forcing the newspapers to publish them or else I'm going to go on a mass killing spree. Like the psychology behind that is so fascinating, because I don't know if the compulsion was more so that they wanted to, because there's potentially more than one Zodiac Killer, in the sense that they were trying to make it look like copycat murders. But it was just so interesting because I don't know if the compulsion was for the actual killing or for notoriety or like a sense of like being famous but anonymous, you know. There's a really interesting psychology that I still definitely don't understand with all of those murders, and then even the psychology behind the copycat murders. So it's like, oh, I've always wanted to kill people, now I can be famous too because I can follow in Zodiac Killer's footsteps and publish these papers. Like the psychology behind other people tacking onto that whole thing, I'm just like, it is beyond
it's me. Nuts. Yeah, yeah, it's totally nuts. Maybe it's because I was born in the 80s and we're in Los Angeles, but Night Stalker has always kind of freaked me out a lot. Mostly because, like, Los Angeles is Los Angeles, but the greater Los Angeles area, I mean, even talking like where my grandparents were living in Granada Hills, at that point in time, everyone was like sleeping with their windows open and all of these things. And here comes Richard Ramirez, and this guy had no profile. Like he didn't just, it's not like John Wayne Gacy who just like only killed young boys or Ted Bundy who, you know, tried to attract young women. He didn't give a shit. Like Richard Ramirez was just like, oh, you're in my way? I would like to rob you. I'm going to take your money. Thank you so much, whole family that I just murdered. And it almost seemed like he wasn't trying to hide. Like, he was sneaking into people's houses and stuff, but he was still, like, going to the grocery store. Like, that's why, like, he was essentially got the shit beat out of him by a bunch of citizens who just kind of, like, saw him, wasn't it in L.A., like, East L.A. somewhere? And the, you know, he ultimately died of cancer, I believe, in prison. But people just started, we're like, hey, we know you. You're terrible. Look at your awful teeth and your terrible breath. Let's just like beat the crap out of you.
Yeah. But even I think Manson will always be an interesting one as well, because Manson never actually,
he didn't kill anybody.
Yeah. He didn't actually kill anyone. He essentially formed a cult and got other people to kill for him. And again, the psychology behind that kind of manipulation. So there you don't even have the compulsion necessarily for the killing of people. It's just, you want to control people to the extent that you know that they would murder someone else on your behalf. Like, that is just...
And if you listen to, like, Cult and Zealot and other podcasts, you know, that are focused on cults and stuff, that's not unusual when it comes to cults. But, oh, man, so trippy. Hard to understand.
Yeah.
Maybe we should read some Anne Rule. I've never read anything of hers. I'd be into that.
Yeah, definitely.
That's one thing that gets name-dropped a lot in this book. Our annual books, so we should probably make that happen.
Yeah, for sure.
But all in all, if you have listened this far and are not mad that we didn't really like this book, or maybe you don't know anything about Georgia and Karen, or who knows, whatever the case is, good for you, not for us, if you liked it.
Yeah,
because. Just not for me, but let's talk rating.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of garnish I'd like to eat in my cup right now.
So. I don't know who rated what last time. Do you remember?
I don't remember at all, but that's fine. I can do the book.
Okay, I'll do the drink. I'm gonna hold on 1 second. I'm just trying to figure out what the rating will be. Let me go here. Go away. I'm gonna go with one. There were 8 chapters in the book, so I'm gonna go out of 8. I'm gonna do out of 8. Should do something. I'm gonna do something dark. Why not? Let's do out of 8. Out of 8 serial killers. Let's just do that. Out of 8 serial killers, what do you rate your drink?
I mean, I could probably have 4 more, so I'm going to give it 8. I really liked it. And I really just want to eat all of the cucumber out of here, and I'm resisting only because you guys don't need to listen to me chew anymore. 8. 8 cool. Serial killers. I'm not going to pick 8 of them, but maybe not bad ones. Not that there are serial killers that aren't bad, but maybe the serial killers serial with like killers. less of a victim count. Or like Dexter. Maybe they're all like Dexter and they kill the bad guys.
Okay.
Even though he's not real. I know that he's not real. All right, what about you, Taylor?
Yeah, I'm going 8. I mean, come on, it's gin. It's great. Refreshing. It's sparkly. Yeah. It's summertime.
I would like this even if it was vodka.
Yeah, totally.
I'm trying to think if there are any other spirits that would taste good this way. I feel like I could have, if you want to make this really boozy, we could have topped it instead of club soda. We could have gone with like Prosecco or something, maybe not something sweet, but like sparkling wine of some kind.
Yeah. Also, yeah, I could have done it with tequila because I'm getting into tequila lately as well.
Oh, tequila would have been great with this. That's true. Except if I did it with tequila instead of the lemon, I would probably do grapefruit.
Also,
like a Paloma with cucumber. That would be really good. Okay. All right. And instead of sweet and sour, you could do like Cointreau or some kind of orange liqueur. Yep. Okay. I'm on board with tequila in this drink.
We'll do a tequila drink soon. We haven't done that.
Yeah.
I
don't think we've ever. Did we do tequila?
I don't know. But
Can we do something spicy? I want like a spicy margarita.
I told you about this, but Trader Joe's has a jalapeno limeade that I tried to make into a. It was really good, but it wasn't spicy enough for me. Like it was a very, very subtle kick. Mm-hmm. So I would do that. I would buy it again though, because like the limeade tartness of it was really nice. And I did that with tequila, and then I would probably just do it maybe with a splash of some kind of juice, so whether that's grapefruit or orange juice or something, and then I would just want to add a little bit more of a kick to it. So
I mean, if you had enough advance notice, you could infuse your juice, your tequila, or even just like a little bit of simple with like raw jalapeno and just like let that sit for a little while. I feel like I'd be into or we talked about this last time, I sent you that liqueur that's like a habanero liqueur or something that would probably also be so good. But that's something I've been wanting because, I don't know, why not? I just like plan what I'm going to have for dinner all day. And
that's my life right now.
Why not plan cocktails to go with them? All right, so book-wise, we're going to rate the book out of John Wayne Gacy's 33 victims.
Oof. Good.
Which is very specific. I'm sorry.
Out of 33 victims. All right.
33 victims that we are respecting. We're not victim blaming. Oh, can I also talk about that? I liked that very much. The way that Karen was like, hey, we messed up. We're saying stay out of the forest. We're saying don't get in somebody's cars. And we can understand how that would sound like victim blaming.
Yeah.
So I appreciated her little recanting of that. Anyway.
No, and I appreciate that too, but I mean, like, I'm glad that, you know, they give tips and they actually told us how not to get murdered. Like, thank you for finally giving me that advice that you promised on the cover, but at the same time, like, I do appreciate, like, when people say, hey, and it's kind of like, anyways, that's beyond the point, but it is, you know, don't blame the victim, but also be smart because you can prevent as much as you can prevent type of thing.
Mm-hmm. So out of 33 victims, I'm going to give it 17.
Okay.
17 victims. Mostly because I know that you always calculate these things into percentages, and I would like...
That's exactly what I'm doing right now.
I don't want to believe that I'm giving this book an F. That sounds terrible. But also, as an educator, I understand the fact that the 100-point grading system is a little messed up, and how you have a 60% chance of failing. I scale things a little bit differently. So if you're in the 50s, you have a D in my class. So...
Hey, there you go.
That's what I'm giving this book.
I was going to do 15 out of 33. And if
so that's an actual fail.
Yeah, mine failed. It's about a 45%.
That's a fail.
Because it's under a 50% for me. I wouldn't recommend. I won't read again. I'll forget it as soon as this podcast is over. So, you know, again, I don't mean to, like, sound super bitchy about all this stuff. It's just I'm clearly not the audience for this. I'm always happy to read books that I might not like because it's expanding my horizons, but I genuinely don't feel like I learned much from this book. So, you know.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think I learned anything. And I feel like we've talked about this a little bit before, but my general criteria for consuming things in any capacity, books, movies, whatever, I want to be enlightened, or I want to be entertained, or that's kind of really it. Yeah. Like, I want to learn something, or I want to have a good time, and I feel like I did not very much do either of those things here. I didn't give it a zero.
Yeah.
It wasn't a zero victims, although that would be nice, wouldn't it, if John Wayne Gacy hadn't killed anybody? oh, Lord. But Georgia and Karen wouldn't like it, probably, if we gave their book a zero.
Yeah. So, you know, again, respect them as people and what they're doing, and good, if you enjoy
it,
good for you,
not for me. And if
it
helps women and young, like, if young people are reading this and are like, oh, yeah, that's right, fuck politeness. I don't have to just do whatever this person says because I'm worried about offending them. Like, if you need to hear that, then that chapter is for you, and then maybe don't read the rest of the book. But
there you go.
Maybe somebody really needs that, and they aren't grown up enough, perhaps, or confident enough, or whatever the case may be, in order to get there. There are a lot of reasons why you might not be able to say no.
Yeah.
So. What do we have coming up, Taylor?
Oof, I forgot. What do we have coming up? Oh.
Oh, my God. We're doing Diana Gabaldon.
Yes, thank you.
Dragonfly and Amber.
I was trying to remember the order we decided on. We're doing Dragonfly and Amber. So, last year, in July, we read the first Outlander book of the Outlander series. And love it. We both got to see Diana Gabaldon speak at an LA Times book festival. Festival of Books.
God, I was really sad that we couldn't do that this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love book festivals. That was fun. Mm-hmm. I saw some cool people speak. The last time I went to the LA Times Festival of Books, I saw... Ooh, why am I blanking on his name? Karamo, thank you, brain, for working. from Queer Eye, because he had just put out a book, which I have not read yet. But I would like to. I just went and saw him because he's a good speaker and he's very motivational, and it was a very uplifting time. But I really enjoyed the time that we went and saw Diana Gabaldon and have her speak about the show as well. So I've read the first book. I've watched the first season. I'm not going to watch anymore till I finish the second book. I'm over halfway done with it now, but I'm very excited to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. As I watch the show every year, I'm like, I really need a reread because... The show is almost new to me now because the books came out so long ago. Also, I feel like she hasn't put out a book in like 5 or 6 years. So we're waiting for more, Diana. What do we have going on after that? We've got a beach read, right?
Yeah. So I was just trying to like put my ear to the zeitgeist. Fancy word. I always try and use it in a conversation. I never actually get a chance to. But anywho.
Oh, you just did.
Thank you. And now I'm bringing attention to it, so it's way less cool. So I just wanted, basically, I've been on the Twitter and the Instagram seeing what books are popular at the moment. And without any knowledge of this author, never having read another book, but apparently she is a New York Times bestselling author. I don't know if it's pronounced... Jennifer either Weiner or Weiner. either way, I will look it up before we do the episode. And her newest book is called Big Summer. And a lot of people are talking about it. I don't know anything else about it, but we've decided we're going to go ahead and give it a go.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a romantic beach read. Like, mm-hmm. based on the cover, if we're judging it by the cover at the moment, I can't tell whether it's one of those books that's going to end happily or not, because it could end up being like a Jodi Picoult book where you think it's all going to be hunky-dory and then there's a big twist and everyone's miserable at the end, because that seems like every Jodi Picoult book.
Yeah.
But, so maybe it won't be like that. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I did just look, though, and I'm going to have to buy it or something, because on Libby, what did I say? There's a 14-week wait for the digital copy and a 6-month wait for the audiobook. So yeah. It must have just come out, or LAPL just like does not have copies or something.
Yeah. So, but it's it's in the zeitgeist. So is it not as cool if I use the word a second time?
I mean, it does show that you know what it means, I guess.
Thank you very much. But anyways, the point being is that I don't know anything else about it, but a lot of people are talking about it, so I'm excited to check it out.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, we're always looking for suggestions because obviously we want to read a whole bunch of books, but what do you want us to read? Mm-hmm. What do you want us to talk about? So we can be reached on Instagram and on Twitter at @DPS_podcast.
If you'd prefer to email us, you can always email us at drunkpoetsocietypodcast@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voice message. That would be really cool.
Totally.
The link is in our bios for both Twitter and Instagram, but you can go to anchor.fm/drunkpoetsociety, and there's a little icon that you can leave us a voice message, and that's always fun too. We don't have to play it on the podcast, but we will feature you if you leave us one. And again, this is just all about making a bookworm community. So if you have suggestions, if you have comments, if you have questions, all that fun stuff, feel free to reach out.
Infuse jalapenos into our margaritas in a very efficient way, please let us know.
Yeah, if you're a bartender and have any great recipes, please send them to us.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god, please.
Other than that, anything else?
Stay sexy and don't get murdered?
Stay sexy, don't get murdered. Great catchphrase, but I think ours is a little better, which is, that it is not drinking alone.
If you have a book.
Have a good one, guys.
All right, bye, guys.